Okay, so today is day number 18 of our Corona Miracles Healing Zoom Circles. And it's actually our last week, and it's been quite a journey. So I'm just grateful for everyone that you've been with me on this journey. So many healing and so many opportunities to release the blocks to healing and just look at it in a safe container. I feel like we've been given this beautiful container by Spirit that's been deep and broad and, you know, just for everything. So today, as you all know, my friend, new acquaintance, but feels like someone you've known forever, Gurpreet Gill is going to be joining us. And I gave you a little bit of a bio about her, but I'll just give a little bit. As I shared on the blog, we connected through her poem, What If?, which I actually looked back, Gurpreet, and I actually read it on the first day of our meeting. So that was really kind of interesting to me how, you know, the timing was so perfect. And that poem was really a poem of possibility, of opportunity, of an invitation. I feel like it was an invitation to look at this in a different way. And I think that just started that momentum into opening the path of healing. And for many of us who are on a spiritual path, and especially, you know, if we're following the teachings of A Course in Miracles or any path, it's all about our perception and our perspective. So having someone step in that can, you know, say, oh, you're heading this way, you may want to turn and look at it this way, is so helpful. You know, it was just a gentle reminder. And then the story was that her name had been misspelled. And being from the same part of India, we have a similar background from Punjabi, I was like, this is not right. Something is not right. I can't publish this name with this poem. It's not right. So I did a little bit of a back work, and I tracked her down, and I attended one of her workshops. And when I listened to her story about what brought her into her path of healing, I felt not only the poem, but just her story was one that was really worthy of being shared and could be really helpful. So that's really the backdrop. So Gurpreet, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me, Seema. It's really a pleasure to be here with this beautiful group. I've heard some delightful, sweet, deeply meaningful things about this group that's been gathering. So thank you. Thank you for inviting me to join.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a treat, Gurpreet, because my parents are on the call and, you know, they're right there. Yeah. So the whole Punjabi thing is like kind of cool.
Yeah. Your mom and dad.
Yeah. Thank you. Yes, that's kind of cool. So Gurpreet, I'd like to start, if you can share with us how that poem came, because you shared it with me a little bit, but let's just talk to us about that poem and how it came to you and all of that. And if you'd like to read part of it, you're welcome to do that as well, because some of us may not know it. So whatever you feel inspired.
Would you like me to, I think it might be, would you like me to start with that?
I was feeling that. So yeah.
It's coming up. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't happen to have it on my desktop. Oh my goodness. So here's the poem. So apologies, because I'm going to read it off of my computer screen. And thank you again for being here. And I don't know what's going to happen today. I'm sitting in the mystery of it all. So here's the post that went viral. You never know what's going to happen when, I guess. So there is so much fear, and perhaps rightfully so, about COVID-19. And what if? What if we subscribe to the philosophy that life is always working out for us, that there is an intelligence far greater than humans at work, that all is interconnected? What if the virus is here to help us to reset, to remember what is truly important? Reconnecting with family and community, reducing travel so that the environment, the skies, the air, our lungs all get a break. With parts of China seeing blue sky and clouds for the first time in forever, with the factories being shut down. Working from home, rather than commuting to work, less pollution, more personal time. Reconnecting with family as there's more time at home, an invitation to turn inwards, a deep meditation, rather than the usual extroverted going out to self-soothe. To reconnect with self, what is really important to me? A reset economically. The working poor, the lack of healthcare access for over 30 million in the US, the need for paid sick leave. How hard does one need to work to be able to live, to have a life outside of work? To face our mortality, checking back into living life rather than simply working, working, working. To reconnect with our elders who are so susceptible to this virus. And washing our hands, how did that become a new thing that we needed to remember? But yes, we did. And the presence of grace for all. There is a shift underway in our society, and what if it is one that is favorable for us? What if this virus is an ally in our evolution, in our remembrance of what it means to be connected, humane, living a simpler life, to be less impactful, more kind to our environment? An offering from my heart this morning offered as another perspective, another way of relating to this virus, this unfolding, this evolution. It was time for a change. We all knew that. And change has arrived. What if? So I think I posted this on March 11th, so about 3 weeks ago, just as the first shock waves were starting to come through of society and our way of life and knowing were just starting to come in. I think it was the day that schools were closed and I was like, okay, here we go. We are at a pivot point for sure in society and humanity's unfolding. And I do a lot of private one-on-one work with clients. And I had a private client here that day. I do some overnight work with people. And so I was like, hey, babes, can I was feeling the squeeze from within. And I've learned when the hand of God squeezes, listen. And so I was like, hey, babes, I'm feeling the squeeze within. Like, I can't ignore it. I need 15 minutes. Can I just? And she was like, yeah, do what you need. So I literally just sat down at my computer at my kitchen island and just typed this out and typed it out in like 5 minutes and posted it. And what was coming through was here is a pivot point in our story as humanity, in our evolution and as a species on this planet, inhabiting this planet. And I trust that we have all had our hardships and challenges in life, but how many of us have had life dissolve to the point of, you know, our careers, our income, our housing, our cars, our food, all of that become, you know, schooling, all of that become a big question mark. And so there was this guidance, there was this, the best way to describe it is just this squeeze, you must. And I was like, okay. So that's how this was born. And there was no boosting of the post. There was no, you know, agenda that this needs to be seen by hundreds of thousands of people. It was like, I have 1,300 followers on my page. Cool. Maybe 10% of them will see it. Awesome. If it touches one person and helps them come home out of fear and into their soul space, great.
That's so beautiful. That's so beautiful. So there have been many things that have touched me when I've read this poem, typed it up and put it up. But, you know, like every time I visited it, it gives me something else. And this time when I was listening to it, the work idea was the one that seemed to be like the neon lights, like work, work. And I felt like, some people are kind of nodding their head here. So I felt like that might be a inlet, because Group Breathe, you and I have had discussions about, you know, and I feel like we have this similar experience, although we haven't really chatted in detail about it. But, you know, coming as immigrant families, right, from India, and here you are in this culture, and the whole thing about, I know my dad, when we moved here, worked like two jobs, a full-time job, a part-time job, and, you know, the hours that he spent. And so that whole thing about work and productivity and how much work is enough, right, to have a life, right? So I'm wondering if you can share with us your background, because you were raised in sort of a very, you know, traditional Indian upbringing, and then how that evolved for you. So please, and as you said, your past life, the work you used to do and what you're doing now. So please share.
Okay, thank you. What wants to be shared? That's the question. So I grew up, I'm born and raised in Vancouver, British Columbia. My parents immigrated to Vancouver via London from Punjab, London, England. They arrived in Canada in the late 60s, early 70s. So my parents have been in North America for a long time, and I was their firstborn here. And it was very much instilled in us, was get an education, go get the best education you can get, and go get a good job. And I followed that path, right? Like, yeah, I did society really well. But whatever society said we were supposed to do, other than getting married, I kind of skipped over that. You know, I went to University of British Columbia, which is a top-notch university in Canada, super hard to get into. And I got 3 degrees from there. I've gone to McGill. Like, I figured out how to be the intellectual, academic. I got this. I knew how to play that game. And ended up working as a French immersion teacher in Canada for 4 years. So teaching math, science, all that stuff in French medium. And then ended up in Colorado. That's another whole story. But I ended up here, and here I ended up doing a variety of things, teaching French and science, and then getting absconded by the University of Colorado at Boulder of, we need you to teach our teachers whatever it is you're doing in the classroom. And I loved that, because I was like, it's easy what I do. The reason why, you know, apparently they were like, kids hate all their teachers. They talk shit about all of them, but they don't talk crap about you. What are you doing? And my kids would be fluent in French in a year. And I said, listen, it's easy. I treat them with love, sincere, authentic love. And that's a word that you don't really hear in education. And I treat them as the sovereign, full beings who have dominion over themselves that they are. I don't care that they're 10 or 14. And that energetic shift would shift everything. And I didn't speak any English to them, right? So that helped as well, as far as French goes. From my very first day and my very first job in Campbell River, British Columbia, this beautiful coastal community on Vancouver Island, I walked into my very first job, and there was this voice, that voice that speaks through our mental space, our heart space, that said, oh, no, 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 you're not supposed to be doing this. And I was like, yo, can you give me like 5 years and I'll just pay off my student loans and I'll figure it out? And it was year 14 of my agreement. I was out of alignment with my agreement by 9 years. And every year, the sense of dread of returning back to work as an educator would get worse, heavier, more nausea. And I just didn't know how to walk away. You know, I'm single. I work for myself. How do I pay my bills? This is all I've known. And the long story short is, you know, God showed up. The divine showed up, the universe showed up. And I was sitting on top of a desk, chatting with my kids, on parlait en français, bon, tout était bien. You know, we were just like chatting away in French as we always did. And I laughed at something they said, a sincere, genuine belly laugh. And the desk that I was sitting on top of with my feet in the seat tipped over backwards. And it tipped over backwards. And I was like, there's nothing for me to hold on to. and my head slammed into this massive, beautiful, antique wooden table that was behind me. And there was a flash of white light, and I went unconscious. That was the first arrival of God, the divine spirit, great creator in my life of, no, you don't know how to get out of this. We're going to help you. And I resisted. Even though my brain hurt, it felt like a volcano was erupting and someone was stabbing my head with a knife for about 4 years. And at the year and a half mark, I thought I was still going to go back to work. I thought, you know, my brain is fine. I was an intellectual. I was a geek. This is all I knew. My family was very heart-centered, but, you know, ugh, that's weird. and because of the resistance, I'm pretty sure God entered my life a second time. And instead of the 2x4, I bought the 4x8, which was, we had catastrophic flooding in Boulder, Colorado in September of 2013. The little mountain town I was living in, I was in a narrow canyon, and the mountainside behind the house I was in gave way. And there was like a mudslide that was like a high-speed train that crashed through the house, ripped the house apart, buried my neighbors, buried people who were with me, buried our cars, flooded our cars. And in that moment, there was this, I knew I was going to be okay, and I knew that if I left, I had sovereign choice. I could have left. I could have chosen a different house to be in, that their chances of survival would have diminished. And that was the first time in my life I felt the presence of angels, what I call the army of invisible angels who kept us alive. There's no reason any of us should be alive today based on what happened that night. And in that moment, there was like this ultimate surrender of, okay, whatever you want from me, I'm here. I'm going to step out of my own way. Show me, guide me. And that, and through the intense trauma, physical, mental, emotional, hypervigilance. Oh my God, I don't trust Mother Earth. My head not working. My head working in a different way. I needed to turn my thinking mind off. I needed to turn my feeling body on. Through my own healing journey, I've stepped into this work. I wouldn't recommend anyone taking that path. It's hard. It was so hard. So when I feel the squeeze now, I go, okay, you got my attention. I'm listening. What do you want? So that's what brought me here.
Wow.
And there's similarities with what's happening globally right now in my system of, we've not listened to the messages, and Mother Earth with her bleaching corals, and as we pillage and rape her and are very unkind to her, she's been sending us messages more and more profoundly. And we've just been like, la, 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 la. We don't want to change our life. And I think this is our 2x4. I don't think this is the 4x8. I think this is the initial, I mean, if you think about it, it's been very compassionate as it comes on, and that we have time to prepare for it. It's not a massive 9.0 earthquake that destroys everything in an instant. So there are some similar threads of, we are being actually very compassionately compelled, asked, invited to shift our ways now.
So, Gurpreet, what is it that our resistance, you know, that part, can you talk about that? That we want to hold on to an old way.
The old way is the way of comfort. It is the way that we have known. And, you know, if we bring in our ego of self-identity, not the Freud ego, but our ego of self-identity who wants to guard and protect us, it's actually here trying to help us. It's very young, right, in its understanding. And what it says is, even if our lives are miserable, at least this is a life I know how to navigate. And so any change in the fundamental structure of how we choose to walk and live and breathe in our life feels very threatening to it. And so we just say, many of us have chosen to say, no, I'm going to keep, you know, living my life of comfort, even though I know that it's not sustainable on the long term. If the whole world lived the way I do, for example, at this point, let me just put it this way. I was homeless for essentially 5.5 years after that mudslide. And it is like, talk about no money, going into the red, no home. I mean, come on, as an Indian, I mean, as a human, I mean, and you add the Indian layer to that, it's like, oh, Bitej, you are not a success. What happened to you? You know, it's like, there's a lot of judgment there. And it was like, I'm undergoing my trials to build the muscle set I need. And of course I would want a home, but I was blessed to buy a home in July. And this is the first time in 8.5 years where it's like, I can breathe. Mm-hmm. And because I can breathe, I can focus on this. So there's like that caveat of, yeah, I have this beautiful home now, and thank goodness. And I mean, truly, if everyone was to live the way we live in North America and Canada and the States in particular, it's not sustainable for the earth. So here we are in this moment of our resistance. We don't even really have a chance to resist because the greater forces are coming in and are just saying we need to stay home, right? Pollution is decreasing. And obviously I feel for the people who are transitioning, and we know about soul contracts, and we know that, you know, people transition when the time is right. And if I were to get this, I would deal. And if my mom, for example, she's 82, my dad's like 83, and she's like, listen, there's always a reason for us to transition. And if this is the reason that my soul has chosen, so be it.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, and it's also like, this is kind of straying from the resistance. Oh no, that's still there. The resistance we have to facing our finiteness by really embracing death as a part of life. Right? And that is also up for so many. So resistance, change, comfort, you know, what I've been doing has been working for me on some level. I'm living, breathing. I don't want to change. Even if change means life could be better. It may just be out of the scope of our imagination of what better looks like.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I stumbled upon this article by someone who's in the academic world, and she was of, her last name, it looked like she was like Pakistani origin. And she was asked to write about, because she had been in many situations where, you know, there had been lockdowns and natural disasters and all of that. And somehow she had managed. So her community asked her, like, how do we cope? You know, please share. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting. And she said, you know, all those people on Facebook or this that are telling you, you know, use this time and be productive and do this and do that and make this happen and all that. And she's like, well, you're not getting the message. You're not getting the message. And it was really lovely because she put it in a this idea of like, and I want, maybe you can speak to this also, that the use of time, right? We seem to feel like, you know, here's now there's this time. And so now people are getting busy on schools, right? Online learning platforms. And she was talking about that, you know, teachers are getting frustrated because they're expecting that, okay, nothing, everything has changed, but nothing has changed because I can still sort of continue as usual, right? Mm-hmm. It's just like, let's use a different platform, right? And then the part about the short-sightedness of that. And I got this image of like the caterpillar and the butterfly and the cocoon. So I was wondering if you're experiencing that with clients, or what is your sense of how we can use an old form in a, like the ego mind is sneaky. And like you said, it's young. So it goes into what it knows, right? Okay. I can't do it this way. I'll do it this way. So I wonder if you could, you know, what you feel about that.
So there's like this, my kitty cat, by the way, escaped his room. So that's who you're hearing. It's the one claw kitty. So he's got his one claw out, but there's a mountain lion in the neighborhood as of last night. So He's staying inside. Just if you hear him going. When change arrives, and here we are in this global, like, when is the last time the whole globe took a moment to pause and rest? When is the last time we as a country took a moment to, as a community, to pause and to rest? Hey, boo-boo, I'm going to have you come down here, my love. Here he is, just in case. You want to see him? There he is. And there's always this desire to lean into the comfort of what we have known, right? There's this invitation to stillness. And right now we have physical stillness, but can we also tap into our inner stillness? And the inner stillness is a place of great discomfort, I'd say, with a broad brushstroke, for a society that has been trained to do, produce. Either you are physically active and you're out being a weekend warrior, or you're building, you know, an addition on your house, or you're somehow constantly doing. And here we are with this invitation of deep stillness. And so with this invitation of deep stillness, there's the resistance to it of, you know, I typed up, he's talking to the birds. Baby, come here. Boobs, come here. We'll just let him be. So there's this desire to return to some semblance of something that we have known to offer some level of comfort. And it can be pretty minimal. It can be pretty miserly in the amount of comfort it offers, but it's comfort nonetheless. So this return to schooling is a training of the mind. It is not, and here's a pause to let the kids be and play and breathe and climb trees or climb all over each other, and to drop into the wisdom of their bodies, the wisdom of their imagination, the wisdom of their creativity that has really been squelched in so many ways. So my sense is, you know, we can only Netflix so much. Mm-hmm. We can only Zoom meet so much. And at some point, the distractions, we get super saturated. And so my hope is, you know, with 14 years of education under my belt, there's some credential I can walk into with a meeting and be like, let your kids be. Let them learn about the school of life. Let them learn about the school of this world. Let them go play in their backyard and dig in the ground and discover earthworms. Like, there's something really, there is an invitation to return to something really, you know, basic feels basic when I say it, but basic in the sense of here are the nuts and bolts, the Lego pieces of what actually make up our life. So as all these people try to school the way they've known to school, it's not going to work. And in a short amount of time, that too will need to dissolve and shift form again. So, you know, it's the grasping of trying to hold on to something normal.
Yeah.
And that too shall pass. And yeah. And we talk about grace and then offering grace there as well. Right? They're doing the best they can do.
Yeah.
With what they know in this moment.
Yeah. My son is in high school, and I was, you know, some of the emails they CC us on. And so I was following what the teachers were doing. And then for a while I was trying to do that, like trying to help him in that way. And it really wasn't working very well. So then I just got to this point and I said, you know, let's just let it be. Let's let it be. Let's let you do whatever it is that you need to do. And if it looks like a lot of Netflix, then that's what it looks like. If it looks like this thing that you're drawn to, then that's what it looks like. If it looks like you need sleep, then that's what it looks like. So so I'm just like watching the mind, because there is that old way that's like wanting to like step in, you know, and manage and do that. And at the same time, I get a lot of comfort in hearing your story and what you're sharing today, and just the sense that there's something to be birthed And we're like witnessing it. We're not doing it. We're like witnessing it and allowing it and sort of doing it at times. It feels that way, but there's a real sense of like, let's just wait. Let's just wait. So yeah, I thank you as your educator perspective. Yeah. That was helpful. So,
and it's still in gestation, whatever it is that's being birthed, right? It's still in utero. It's not ready to be birthed just yet. So we're experiencing the contractions of, you know, as a woman's body shifts and grows, there's a contraction of, ooh, did I really want to do this? There's the contraction of I'm losing control of, you know, fill in the blank. And so we take that metaphor and we apply it to what's happening here. There are contractions that are happening of we're losing control of the way our lives used to be. We, you know, my income has diminished significantly and it's like, can I breathe into this? My food, you know, in Canada, it's interesting. They're telling people, you know, get ready for food scarcity. You're not hearing it in the States yet, but they're telling people in Canada, like, plant your gardens, please. We don't know what's going to happen with the food source. So there's like this scarcity thing that's coming up on so many ways. Maslow's hierarchy of basic needs, right? Like all those basic needs are up. Mm-hmm. Nothing is guaranteed right now. And can we breathe into that? And can we breathe into the contraction of whatever the fear mind and the fear body and the pain body are bringing up to distract, to, in their own way, try to be helpful? And if we take on the burden of futuring on that level, then we freeze. Versus, I don't know what's going to happen, but I will do my best in this moment to make sure all is well. I'll plant my garden. Instead of planting flowers, I'll plant tomatoes or what have you. You know, instead of whatever the path is for every individual to navigate to, all to that place of center home of no matter what the hurricane, the storm, the natural disaster, the dissolving of our life is in this moment or to come, I am home within myself. That all is well here, even if I'm physically injured, even if I get sick. And that's something that I really had to learn trial by fire. It sucked. I mean, truly, it was a harsh lesson. And thank you. And thank you for that lesson, because as this comes up, I'm like, okay, and how can I help others find their own way home? I'm not here to lead in any way. I'm just here to be like, hey, we can do this. How do I know? Because I've already had to live this in so many ways. That's where my like my invisible card of credentials comes up with this. And you heard that in our workshop of what am I doing here? Like, why am I holding the space? And here you go. Here's the 5-second snippet. So a lot is up. And if it means sleeping, sleep. You know, there's a story of, I have a Canadian passport, so it's easy for me to go to Cuba. Fly to Vancouver, see my parents, go to Cuba. And I was exhausted from all of this happening over these past few years. And I couldn't afford it, but I was like, I need it. So I went to Cuba. I lay on a beach. I slept. I ate. I lay on a beach. I slept. I ate. That's all I did. And it was, you know, on the productive level, that was a fail. And on my soul's level, I think by day 10, I swear to God, there was this, this piece of my soul that had fractured off, that had splintered off, she finally felt like I had rested deeply enough to receive her. Mm-hmm. And that was about 3 years ago, and that's when my practice started taking off. Deep rest and deep quiet and deep silence and like not moving a lot is also another form of being that's equally valid. Yeah. But it's not valued by this particular structure. So there's an invitation. Whatever your particular way is, do it. Even if it feels like, you know, I should be doing something else. The should mind.
Yeah. I remember traveling to India with my parents, and we went to Haridwar and Rishikesh by the Ganga. And I remember there were these mountainous areas or some caves or something, and you would see a light go on and then it would go off at night. Like, just, I would see that. And I asked people, like, what's there? And said, these are people that just are in meditation and silence, and they're just broadcasting that, you know, that's what they do. And even then I'm like, wow, like what a wondrous way to live, you know, like, not, I'm saying that, you know, we have to do that, but just like, I was like, I don't know, 20s or something like that, maybe. And it was so beautiful because there was a sense of like the value of that, you know, that it was valuable. It was not like the society honored it, you know, that it was considered, and it wasn't like being out there in the go-go, get, you know, get mode. So I'm reminded of that. And I feel like I want to just touch upon one more aspect of a story that you shared with me. And then perhaps maybe move into an experience if you'd like to lead, you know, something with breath work. But I know you had shared with me, and you talked about your family, like that you were more in the intellect and the family was more in the heart. And can you just talk about that context and how, because I know there's been a lot of healing in that for you.
I'm going to ask you to repeat that last part just a little. Someone was giving me nose kisses and I got a little distracted.
It's good reason to be distracted. It's always, that's a beautiful reason. Yeah, I felt this desire to ask you to reflect what you feel you'd like to share, what's coming through around, like in this seeming parable that you experienced and many of us experience, there's a sense of coming home where there's a reintegration with our family of origin also. Whatever shape, form that can look like. And you had shared with me that you actually, you know, ran away from home, and now there's been all this healing. So I just was really curious. So yeah, I'd love to hear more what you feel inspired to share.
The baby's going to be taken to the vet for this on Thursday. You know, where does resistance show up? So this is the way I'm perceiving this. And if I need to, I invite you to jump in if I'm off. There's this invitation to the many places of resistance that we have in our lives. And growing up with my parents was very challenging, very challenging. You know, I'm born here with a very different cultural understanding than, you know, I'm not in a little village in India, mom, is what I would say over and over and over again. Like, you can't expect me to live like that. So that brought a lot of cultural conflict into my relationship with my parents. And there has been this beautiful journey of my evolution, their evolution, and then emerge, you know, like the re-merging back into the soul family unit, if you will. Hard work, not easy, a lot of hard conversations, and always, you know, from a place of love. And that became easier after the head injury and after the mudslide. Like, just, you know, my filters were stripped away. Head injury is fantastic for that. It takes away all your filters. If you need to rage, you can rage. It's cool. I think that as we sit with the question of what is truly important to me, you know, for some, I'm not going to say for all, for some, you know, either the parents are reaching back out, or as a child, you know, I'm 46, I'm still their child, as a child reaching back out. And we live, you know, it's not common. So I talk to my mom every second or third day. I talk to my dad about once a week, and that's not super common. Right. So I have friends who are like, that's weird, Gurpreet. And I'm like, no, it just is. That's just what works for me. And it's not a cultural expectation. It's what we've agreed to. And we can review that contract. So I think a lot of contracts are up. The way in which we have chosen to distance in a lot of ways. And are there contracts that are up for renewal for the way in which we choose to interact with our elders? Who are my elders? My elders who are still living are my parents. They're the wisdom keepers. They're the faith keepers. I'm trying to get my mom to start her own Facebook Live. She's ridiculous. She's ridiculous and she's so beautiful in her own way, and she just giggles, you know. And so as we sit with the question of what have we pushed to the fringes of society that are actually integral to our cashiers, our male people, are all these people who we didn't really give, or maybe some didn't give a lot of heartful thought to. And the same goes to family structures. And not everyone has a family structure that's welcoming to come back into. I get it. And where have we artificially distanced ourselves because we've been busy? I'm busy with my job. I'm busy with my family. I'm busy with my career. I'm busy with whatever. And so my personal motto is, I'm never too busy to answer my mom's phone call. Because if that was her last call to me, she's 82, you know, no, hey Ma, what's going on? So the only time I don't answer it is obviously if I'm sleeping. She's so pissed about that because my phone's on airplane mode. Bitty, no, do you have to answer the phone? Ma, I'm sleeping. Or if I'm with a client, and then there's the odd client who's like, no, go ahead, it's your mom. And I'm like, no, you know? So there's that aspect of where have we artificially, I think the broader question is also, where have we artificially distanced ourselves? Because it's too scary to be in a heart space. It's too scary to be in our soul space. It's too scary to have those conversations with mom and dad or with ex-partner or whomever, because it requires being vulnerable. It requires, you know, opening those tender Achilles heel points up to the possibility of hurt, but we also open up to the possibility of immense transformation and transmutation of the old narrative. So, and there's also a comment here about going back to teaching online. And I want to acknowledge that from Shirley of, yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm not suggesting that we not do any schooling. I'm suggesting we just do education differently. And yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, I could totally, you know, with my mom, I feel the same way. So thank you for, thank you for sharing that. That's lovely. That's really lovely. Yeah.
You know, we like cozy family gatherings and we get together. They have this thing every Monday, my nieces and their partners, their husbands and my sister, they all gather at my mom's house, at Nani's house. And I mean, literally they just hang out and kind of sit and stare at each other and chat or maybe play a game. And like, there's nothing to be done other than simply be in the joy of each other's company.
Yeah.
And we are not the perfect family, I assure you. We have our stuff, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, you were talking about your mom and Facebook, and it was a big leap for my parents to join on Zoom. Like, it was a big, you know, a big thing for them to finally get their iPad out. And, you know, so I think it was lovely. It was lovely that we can connect this way.
Yeah. Did I answer your question? I want to also check in there.
Yeah, yeah. I feel whatever comes through is always
great.
Perfect.
Great.
Yeah, unless, yeah. So I'm trusting that. I'm really trusting, and I love that we both trust that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm really feeling open. If you feel inspired to lead us in an experience, and then we can open it up later for others, if that feels inviting for you.
Yeah. I was just looking at a couple of comments on the side. There was a comment of, why did you say that we avoid connecting with our parents to avoid feeling vulnerable? Because it's like our parents, they used to be the ones who told us what to do and how to do and how to be. And my story is that there are segments of our population here who haven't quite navigated from that place into colleagueship with their parents, right? And so there's still this hurt space, this young probably a young space within that still feels, you can't tell me what to do. And that there's this energy of defensiveness or this energy of protection of, I need to protect myself from them. Because at some point, perhaps they, in my story, you know, perhaps they overstepped or whatever. So that's, Gentiana, that's, I think, the place from where, this is the place I feel. It's like we're also being asked to mature and evolve our relationship with our parents. And some people have beautiful relationships with their parents. Some have codependent relationships with their parents. And some have abusive relationships with, from, towards, you know, and finding our way. How can we speak our truth and speak our truth with compassion and grace, even if they happen to be our abusers, even if they happen to be the ones who made our lives super challenging, even if it's my story and my filter that brings that perspective, can I still speak my truth to them and open the portal of potentiality and possibility around finding some common ground of understanding? What all the, there were many stories I had, and then when I brought them up with my mom, it was mostly with my mom and some with my dad, we had this beautiful opportunity to like shift our center point with each other. Oh, wait, what? Oh, I thought you, oh, fuck, I didn't, excuse my language, you know, and to find her place of my mom, as overbearing as my young self found her, was truly acting from a place of love and care. And she was acting from a place of love and care that came from a cultural warp, frozen in time place of when she left India.
Yes.
And can I hold compassion and grace for that, that she was being her imperfectly perfect human soul self? So,
yeah.
So with that, thank you for that question, Gentia. I can, if it feels alive, I would love to do a short practice. It would be like 5 to 7 minutes long. So one of the things I do is I'm a breathwork practitioner. So you might know that as pranayama. You might know that as Simran. And it's a practice that we use with a circular connected breath that we breathe in a particular way, where we call in our vital life force energy, that the way in which we breathe is our capacity to also live and be present in our lives. And it takes us out of our mind space. It bypasses our mind space and it drops us into the wisdom of our soul self, into the wisdom of our bodies. It's safe. It's gentle. I know that our culture has been doing this practice for millennia. My parents still do it to this day. And my story is that because it is safe and gentle and it offers an altered state of consciousness. So instead of the consciousness of the mind, it drops us into the consciousness of our eternal infinite self. That this is a conversation between my soul, the breath that has breathed me every moment of my life, and whatever your relationship is to the greater. That is the cycle that's being opened up, invoked, invited in. And it's a powerful, gentle, safe modality to access our subconscious, to access our fears and programming of why do I respond this way? Why do I react that way when this happens? And it has us clear our hard drive of that which no longer serves and make room for the new. And it goes layer by layer of whatever is ripe and ready for harvest. And we release it with love and gratitude because at some point it did serve us. And at some point it became outdated and it no longer serves us. And it, what it does is it can ease stress, ease anxiety. And instead of the fear mind futuring and worrying, it brings us, it assists us in bringing us home to what is my truth in this moment. And so if that's something that feels, usually it's like a 45 minute to an hour and a half thing, but we can do a short intro for like 5 to 7 minutes, which you can then, I will give you access to one of my playlists on Spotify. go ahead, access it. You can join one of my free or by donation sessions that I'm doing right now. This is all about seva. Like, this is a time to give back. And if you, you know, how, if and however this resonates with you, if it resonates with you, if there's gifts that are sown within you by this practice, great. How can I facilitate that for you? So I have sessions. Great. If you want to join them, if you want to do it on your own, great. You go a lot deeper when you're held, and I'll give you access to my playlist. I have several playlists on Spotify right now. So I have one song that I've had on repeat for like 2 days. It just speaks to my soul. So if that feels good, I'm happy to, and I just have a desire to check in for consensus.
Yeah.
Like a thumbs up or...
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll take somewhere between 5 and 7 minutes. Yeah. Okay. So I'm not going to have you open Spotify. Seema, I want to check in with you. Does that feel good?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. That's what was feeling. Yeah. When from yesterday, I was feeling good.
I'm not going to have you open Spotify and find the playlist and all of that. I'm going to play the music through my computer to you. So if it's a little like not fantastic, you know, my request is to flow with it. The idea is to get a flavor and a taste of it. And then if it's something that feels really lovely to your system, join me for a full-on session. And I'm happy to do a full-on session for just you as well another time if desired. So here's my invitation.